Broadcasting from Hollywood, California, it's Grant's Rants, Hollywood Talk.
The death of Cecil the Lion strikes a chord with just about everyone. We go in deep, fast food goes high end, and a recent shopping trip sends me into a rant. All that and more with Paulie Nichols as my guest co-host next.
Let the ranting begin. I'm excited. I'm sitting here with Paulie Nichols, writer, performer, storyteller,
Hi.
And smart, smart friend of mine, Pauline.
Oh my gosh.
Thanks for coming in.
No, stop. Say more. No, stop.
I'm really setting you up for a big,
introduction
here.
Yeah, the bar is high.
Pauline, we have a lot to rant about. I know you're going to have good, strong opinions about things. We've known each other now for a couple years.
Yeah.
We bonded through being pages at NBC.
That's true.
Back in the day, both on the set of The Tonight Show and behind the scenes and in the buildings of NBC.
Yeah. That was, I don't know, 2, 3, 4 years ago. It was a while ago, but it was the one here in Los Angeles. And probably one of my favorite working experiences, to be honest. It's great.
Yeah, I look back at that as really, like, my big, like, okay, when all else, like, fails, and I feel like, okay, am I really here doing it? I look at that, and I'm like, okay.
Oh, yeah.
You're here doing it. You were an NBC page. Mm-hmm. Like, that counts.
That, oh, it definitely
that
does.
That means something. Like, if no one didn't believe in you, you would have never gotten that program. So, like,
that's
like,
true.
Yeah.
It's crazy competitive, and I don't know what your path was getting in, but it's like everyone who was in that circle going to the commissary to get lunch at the same time, they were one out of 9,000 applicants.
Yeah.
That's crazy. I don't even know what 9,000 people looks like, but you're one dot in an ocean.
And it's funny because no one could ever peg or identify what the quality was that we got paid. Because there is something with being an NBC page, there's so many of us. They're not very many, but I mean, there's like, what would you say? Out here in LA, there were maybe what, like 30, 35?
In any year, it would cycle in because it's a rotational mm-hmm. program. For those of you who don't know, it's like a rotational program for a year. And you apply for different assignments. So there's a constant cycle of interviewing. So it would be less than 10 new pages every 2 to 3 months. So what is that? Maybe 30 to 40 faces.
At most.
A year.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And everyone is different. Everyone has different personalities and qualities to them. And no one of us are really alike.
Mm-hmm.
So it was just so interesting. We were trying to figure out, like, I remember sitting down before one of the shows and just like, how did the, what do you all have in common here? How are we all here?
What's the X factor?
Yeah. Cause some of us had just graduated. Some of us have been out there working for a while.
Yeah.
A majority of us had held at least one role between graduation and then getting into the program.
Right.
So it was like, what is it? Well,
yeah.
I don't know. Yeah.
I don't know. Mm-hmm. I wish I could say that everyone had a lightning bolt on their forehead like Harry Potter, but no, I don't know.
We'll never know.
Yeah, but forever grateful to it, definitely.
Absolutely. Well, one thing I'm not grateful for, I need to go into this.
Okay, tell
something's
me.
Really bothering me.
Okay.
I'm done with something.
Grant's rant of the day.
I'm done with going up to Hollywood and Highland, anywhere near that area. All those shops. I recently had family in town.
Okay.
And we had to go do the tourist experience, which is fine. I put it off till the very last day, literally like the last thing we did.
Right.
We wanted to go and buy t-shirts and go into all those godforsaken shops. So I did it. Flash forward to like 10 days later.
Okay.
My sister gets a job as a teacher and she now wants to have a Hollywood themed classroom.
Oh, God.
So she's like, oh, I wish I was there. When I was there, I would buy things, you know, at those shops, like the, you know, the tacky sign, a Hollywood sign.
The kitsch.
Like, like Rodeo Drive, like, you know, there's all that stuff.
Uh-huh.
And we dealt with that. I was like, you know, though, first of all these police officers were yelling at us across the street.
Yeah.
And I thought they were yelling at us. And we looked over our shoulder and there was like a team of homeless people standing next to us. They were yelling at them to keep moving.
Yeah.
So they wouldn't stop.
They do travel in teams.
They do. They do. And so I was like, this is like, I took this, I was so frustrated because I took them on a really nice trip. We went up to Santa Barbara. We went down to the beach. Like, we did a really nice trip. Then, you know, to end the trip like that with like this, you know, Hollywood, for those who have not been here, there's nothing glamorous about Hollywood. I don't find it glamorous in the least. The Walk of Fame is like filthy. There's like people all over the place yelling good at the people in your face, trying to get you to go on all these tacky tour rides, which none of them impressed me. You know, they're in your face, so you see the signs of like where they're gonna go and all that.
Huge, so like clapboards.
It's people like, walking around. They're like, oh, come see where we filmed Pretty Woman. Do you think I have an interest in going to see where they filmed that? How the hell old is that movie at this point? Is that a selling point for me?
No.
Is that a selling point for anyone in their 20s? I couldn't care less. So I'm like, okay, yeah, thanks. So flash forward to a few days ago when I had to go up after they left looking for my sister to get this stuff.
Right.
Well, those people in there play so many games, they pretend they can't read the damn stickers that have handwritten prices on them.
Right.
So I'm like doing math and trying not to be gypped off and, gypped or ripped off.
Right.
And it was just such a lousy experience. You get bumped into so many people. It's hot. None of those stores are air conditioned. Mm-hmm. The stuff in there is all junk. I've never seen such highly overrated priced junk in my life in there.
Yeah.
Have you had to go up there for anything recently?
I haven't, but I completely relate to the experience. Isn't it thematic, though? Because isn't that Hollywood? It's a lot of
plastic junk.
It's a lot of plastic junk. And it's a lot of smoke and mirrors and like, ooh, look at this. Oh, look at that. It's a lot of jewelry that looks nice one day and then leaves a ring around your finger.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I was really surprised by the prices on everything. And I'm not expecting it to be like, you know, cheap. They're taking advantage of the people that are up there.
Yeah.
But it was literally like dollar store stuff for like $13 minimum.
Yeah.
It was amazing. And it was just so like turned off by it. And it's like the people that are there, they're bumping into you. And like people think like Hollywood and Highland. You have no idea. Like that whole area, even to get up to the 101, like I'm going on a rant about this because I really can't. I can't do it anymore. Like I'm not. I can't even be bothered. Mm-hmm. Like that whole area is so freaking congested and the stores are such junk. I don't know. I don't know how they get people to even bother to go over there. I was like offended.
Yeah. It's famous. I mean, when you think Hollywood, you think the sign, of course. You think the movie, television industry, but you also think the Walk of Fame, like all those stars, you know? So that is, what, a mile long? And of course, everyone's like, oh my gosh, I want to find Johnny Carson. I want to find the Judds, you know?
Yeah, but it,
and
like, stinks of urine. It smells. And it's like all this prestigious star on the Walk of Fame. And it's like, there's like, you know,
yeah,
a team of homeless people there.
They travel in teams. Their mascot is invisibility.
And then you've got the Scientologists that are running around at that building.
Oh, yeah, in the outfits. That's them in the outfits, right?
Okay. Yep. They've got their little, they look like waiters. They're dressed in black and white, little vest, and they're like handing out as much stuff as possible. And all over Hollywood, you see like the free movie ticket to go see Dianetics, the Scientology film.
Yeah, it's funny.
I was just in Hollywood the other day too for an interview, and there was like a whole bunch of them rolled up in a corner somewhere. Like they just hand them out, like So yeah, no. When it comes to anything like that, Hollywood and Hilo will not see me for a long time.
Yeah.
You know who else hasn't seen me for a long time?
Tell me everything.
McDonald's. I haven't been there in years. I have no intentions to go there. These companies are kind of going through a struggle right now.
They are. Yeah. That's funny. It reminds me of that one joke I think Jim Gaffigan tells about fast food. He's like, yeah, I'm totally over fast food, except when it's late at night. Then it's like it becomes an ex-girlfriend. And it's like, well, it is 1 o'clock, and I guess I'll stop by / text. Yeah, but
The McDonald's is suffering. Wendy's is not doing that well. They are now basically, they only hold 5% of their own restaurants, and everything else is franchised out. That just happened to be the business model that keeps them afloat.
Right, I didn't know that.
Burger King is actually doing the best.
Really?
Who would have thought? I mean, I haven't stepped foot in a Burger King.
I couldn't even tell you where one is.
It's true.
There's one. Wait a second.
There's one in La Cienega.
There's one on Santa Monica too.
Okay.
I think. Is it Hollywood? See, we don't know.
Yeah, so that is surprising.
But yeah, this is one of McDonald's first years where they are closing more restaurants than they're opening. They're opening like 60 and closing 170, which is a huge sea change for them. Hasn't happened for like 40 years.
And they can't figure out why. We could tell them why.
Yeah.
I mean, tastes have changed, and you can't serve chemical food to people and expect them to keep buying it, whether it's on a dollar menu or not.
Yeah.
There's too many choices. There's too many options.
There's too many better options, yeah. You know, it was, 2001 when the Super Size Me movie came out with Morgan Spurlock? And that, along with other work from like Michael Pollan, I think his name is, it looks like Pollan, but he pronounces it Pollan. Mm-hmm. So work from Michael Pollan. He did that book, The Omnivore's Dilemma. And have you read it?
I have not.
It came out within the last 5 years, and it is written by a guy who's a food researcher slash writer for one of the major newspapers. When print wasn't dead. And he looked at 4 different types of meals and traced them back to their origins. So one was like, all right, I'm going to go out for this chapter and have someone teach me how to forage. I'm going to live off the land. Another one was, I'm going to go out and only eat stuff that's like hyper-local, organic, and see what that philosophy is like. But one of the meals was a McDonald's hamburger, cheeseburger, and fries. The iconic, their thing, right? Mm-hmm. And he uncovered everything that's as horrible as you would imagine, right? Mm-hmm. How petroleum leads to corn production, leads to industrialized farming, leads to the treatment of those animals in those facilities,
right?
Which is horrible. Which in turn, I love every Prius that you see on the street, but the emission reduction from a car that you would get buying a Prius is nothing compared to what happens when you have millions of animals stacked together in an industrial environment, releasing things like methane into the atmosphere. Mm-hmm. That's what's killing us, right? Mm-hmm. That's what is leading to global climate change.
Right. You know?
That's unsustainable.
Looking at their market overseas in Asia, which is the fastest growing market for them, they can't even maintain that. Mm-hmm. They've had to do more different gimmicks for that to maintain. And they've been closing a lot over there. They've got all different types of things. They've got pink buns, red buns. God, there was a picture. This is actually Burger King, but they're doing well. Right. And what they're offering is a black bun and black cheese.
Oh, God.
Which does not look the least bit appetizing to me. And I don't know what it is about that culture, but they love all of that. Mm-hmm. They love there's like little baby pink hamburgers. Like the whole thing's pink, and they have like little petals. They look like little like flowers, and they come out of like a jewelry box.
Right.
And it's a cardboard, you know, whatever, but that's like, it's like a little kitschy thing. It's like, sounds like Hollywood stuff.
Yeah.
But
it's making the food the toy.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. And that's doing well for them, but it's just, I just don't get it. What happens when you run out of all these things? Is it just a losing battle?
Absolutely. Absolutely. There's a saying in advertising, like, you sell the sizzle and not the steak. So when you're doing things like dyeing buns pink, putting it in a jewelry box, it sounds like selling the sizzle to distract from the non-steak. It's very low quality ingredients. But I can't blame them for throwing literally everything at the wall. There's a billion people who you can tap into, and why wouldn't you try, especially as sales in the U.S. decline? But it seems like a distraction.
Would you ever eat a black burger with black cheese?
two, I might have a couple bites of one.
Really?
You know, just to be like, I did it.
Yeah. I can't do the dyes. I wouldn't want to do it.
Yeah. Don't get me wrong. You will know that you're ingesting a chemical bath. You're basically pickling your kidney when you eat it. You know, yeah. It's going to stay in your system for 3 weeks, you know.
Well, now they're coming out with these high-end fast food restaurants. Mm-hmm. They're rebranding some of these places, and there's like the M restaurant, and
it's
McDonald's food. Uh-huh. It's McDonald's food, but it's served to you on a plate with tablecloth.
Right.
Someone comes and there's a white glove involved. Like you're eating McDonald's food, and
really?
Then there's like a lot of these places. Starbucks has one. Sparrow, it's still in a couple of the walls around here.
Oh my God, I passed out on a few of their slices of pizza.
Well, they have like some Italian kitchen. It's like a very Italian authentic name, and they're going out there and like, I don't know where these are. So maybe they're in major cities, maybe international.
Right.
But this is something they're trying with those. But it's still the same food. But they're making it look like it's natural.
And
a lot of these places now do kind of want to incorporate like ingredients that are from, like, you know, potatoes that are from that environment or that location.
I did not know about the upscale McDonald's situation. Mm-hmm. That's kind of hilarious to me. It's like saying, hey, would you like some vomit? How about vomit on China?
Yes.
Well.
And we'll give it to you. Hold the white glove on our fingers.
Tell me more. Hold on my call, Sheila. You know what I mean?
Yeah. It literally is like cloaking, like.
Oh, yeah, that's a great word for it.
Yeah, it's such a waste. Like, I mean, but people are stupid enough to do it. It exists. More than one chain has done it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's proving itself to be something.
Right. But you got to have the legs. Mm-hmm. You know? You got to have the legs because that business model isn't exclusive to fast food. What they're essentially doing, it sounds like, is trying to change fast food to fast casual, which is the business food genre that Chipotle came up with, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's a little bit more upscale. You're willing to pay more because they have such a commitment to things that are locally made, and they divested from industrial farming meats. Chipotle is the biggest buyer of non-industrially raised meats in the world. Like, that's what they do.
Mm-hmm.
And knowing about industrial farming, reading Michael Pollan, seeing what happens to your body through Morgan Spurlock, you know, Super Size Me, which is no longer an option, thanks in part to that documentary, right?
Mm-hmm.
Having more information gives you the ability to make more informed decisions and vote with your dollars,
right,
which is what you can do at Chipotle. They don't treat their people as if they are... This is not a Chipotle commercial.
Yeah, I know, right?
Yeah, but they don't treat their people like they're disposable. They have a very strong commitment to growing people from within. Not so at McDonald's. How happy are the people when you walk into a Chipotle versus the people when you walk into a McDonald's?
Mm-hmm, it's true.
You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And...
Good point.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. One thing I want to point out, the difference too also, is now these companies like McDonald's and Burger King, all their advertising is being directly targeted towards the Latino community and the African-American community.
In an area where there is social and economic inequality, they're called food deserts, right? You can't get asparagus water in Compton.
Mm.
Okay?
Yeah, yeah. Well, I want to take a little turn, and I want to go
and
into...
And we're going to take a McDonald's break.
Oh, no. You can do that by yourself. But I want to take a little turn, and I want to talk about this controversy surrounding this lion. I've heard it pronounced a couple of different ways. I'm going to call this lion Cecil.
Yes.
I'm making that choice. But I've heard a lot about this lion. We saw Jimmy Kimmel have a severe reaction on his show. Mm. And the news has been out there now for a few weeks.
Yeah.
My God, though, the reaction in news, cable news, on Twitter in general is unbelievable.
Oh, yeah.
And people are, you've got Sharon Osbourne calling him Satan, Piers Morgan's dumbass is wanting to be hanging on the wall in his office.
Right.
It's like all these people are showing their ass about this lion. I understand that this is a tragedy, especially to the wildlife conservative community.
Absolutely.
You know, it affects more than just one life.
Right.
Because these lions, they do travel in prides, and, mm-hmm. and when the male alpha is eliminated,
the protector, yeah.
They do get murdered. So it's a terrible, terrible thing. The guy couldn't have gone about it any worse. He's a bonehead. Yeah. But the reaction that this seemed to strike such a chord with is unbelievable from people.
Oh, yeah.
Where, you know, there are other things here in the United States, overseas, especially in the Middle East, that are severely affecting people that are, you know, people, humans.
Right.
Yeah. And I feel like they just don't get the same attention.
Yeah.
Of course, there's a lot of reasons why.
Yeah.
What did you think of this?
Yeah, I mean, I know the articles. I remember the story. It's fairly recent, actually. And it did explode because it struck a chord. And the reaction from some communities was, really? Everyone's up in arms about this lion when people can drive down the street here in the U.S. and get shot point blank for nothing,
mm-hmm.
with impunity. So there was that outrage, right? It's like, this seems like a small issue when there are so many other big issues that people should be upset about. I don't think that there is a limit to empathy. No one who woke up the morning that story broke about the lion said, today I've got 2 ounces of empathy left and I gotta choose how to use it wisely. Yet, after that story broke, there was an explosion of outrage. People, I don't know if you saw what happened on the Yelp. So the guy who, I think his name is Dr. Palmer, right?
Mm-hmm.
The dentist who shot, beheaded, trophy killed this lion. He had a cosmetic clinic or dentist office, and they had about 4 reviews on Yelp. After that story broke, within the next 24 hours, the reviews went from 4 to 6, 7, 8,000.
Mm-hmm.
These are people who maybe never had a Yelp account, didn't know what a Yelp was, right?
Yeah.
But who logged in to register their moral outrage. And none of those people knew that morning they'd be doing that.
Right.
So I don't think that empathy, there's a limit to it.
See, in my opinion, from where I'm seeing it, I think that this was something that came up that was universal amongst a lot of people. A lot of people felt the same way. Where I feel like in this, especially now in this country, there are so many people that are divided on so many topics.
Uh-huh.
This was something everyone could agree on. There wasn't necessarily a huge debate. Of course, there are people out there that are hunters, you know,
mm-hmm.
this is what they do. However, you know, there are a lot of responsible hunters that would go and get the correct permits and wouldn't lure
an animal. And I think he may have done that, by the way. I don't know if, like, just to play his lawyer for a second, mm-hmm. on paper, if he didn't have knowledge of that lion being protected, then who would he know? It was by the book for him, right?
The story that they painted, they kind of went another direction. They were saying that he not only went as far as going and doing this, knowing that this animal was endangered, but that he lured the animal off the reservation so he could get to him. And then, you know, they targeted this lion for like 40 hours waiting for it to die so they could get a clear shot.
So he could shoot it in the head.
Yeah, so like to me it's like, I don't really know the full story. I don't know the truth because I'm not that man myself. I'm only getting what the media is feeding me. So, you know, I don't really necessarily know the correct answer. But I think that this was something everyone could kind of come together with and bond over.
Mm-hmm.
Also, you know, I hate to say it, but there's not much really in the news right now. And it's very easy for these cable networks to latch onto something like this and mm-hmm. get two people and get people really upset.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you've got celebrities that are endorsing this hatred.
Uh-huh.
It's on your Twitter feed. It's right in front of you. So
they were saying they're doing what, like F that guy, da da da.
Yeah,
hunt this guy down. Oh yeah, the Pierce.
They were giving out his address, his own house. They were calling for all this type of action to be taken for him to not even be a citizen of the United States anymore.
Like,
so you're getting all of this. you know, celebrities are so influential and all that, and it, people just latched onto it. Now, Jimmy Kimmel's reaction was so interesting.
Yeah.
He kind of delivered the news as if he was doing some quick reporting, and then he got emotional about it.
I'm wondering
where that came from. What did you think of that moment?
I was kind of surprised. It was, and I'm sure you can rewatch it online if you didn't see it live, but he kind of launched right into like 4 or 5 minutes, and he went through the story point by point. And this is the top of the show, right? This is the monologue. This is what a team of writers, some of whom only do monologue jokes, right?
Right.
So they've been pumping out 50 to 100 of these jokes a day, hoping they end up in, you know, the 7 minute top of the show monologue. And he pushed that aside, or maybe had an agreement with everybody at the start of the day, and talked about the story, and then did get very emotional about it, and then ended by giving people like a call to action by saying you can log on to, I forget what he pointed to, but I think it was like maybe a petition to outlaw it, or
there was a
donation.
Website for the wildlife reservation that has been working to track all of these animals and trying to have the numbers increase with how many exist, and they've been protecting them.
Yeah.
You know, a good resource, smart.
Yeah.
I did not expect anything like that coming from a late night show.
Right, and I didn't either. Mm-hmm. It kind of reminds me of when all this stuff with Britney Spears broke. This is like right after she shaved her head, and it was clear that she was dealing with extreme emotional issues, possibly related to alcoholism, right? Right after that, a whole bunch of jokes. Still jokes about that to this day, right?
Mm-hmm.
But on his show, I think it was Craig Ferguson, who himself is sober, right, in recovery from alcohol, and like almost killed himself, you know, before getting into treatment. He had a monologue where he told his personal story. He was like, this is what happened to me, and maybe we should not pick on this person. I want to vocally offer my support to them. And not the type of thing you expect.
Right. It's so easy to make a joke and just be like, on to the next. This line doesn't necessarily affect people, like individuals themselves, but yet so many people are so inclined to speak out, and they want to bring this to light. And there's so many people that are animal lovers and hate the injustice. It's actually good, I think, in a way, to see such a reaction in a way. Mm-hmm. Of course, it does detract from other things, but like you said, you can have feelings and emotions towards many different injustices and human rights and those issues as well. But I think it's kind of almost a good thing to see people that stand up for something, especially on a platform like a late night show or on Twitter. Of course, you know, not everyone handles it correctly with the correct rhetoric, you know, calling, you know, him all type of names, wanting him dead. I mean, it's really ridiculous, but I kind of like that people still actually stand for something.
Yeah. I mean, and you're right. Some of the Yelp reviews were hilarious, you know?
Yeah.
So that's one way that the comedy showed up in the tragedy, because those are twin sisters, right?
Mm-hmm.
Where there is one, there's usually the other. And it does seem like an isolated incident, because it's been going on for years and will continue to go on for years, right?
Mm-hmm.
Many more lions, many more elephants, many more rhinoceri, right? That's a plural. Many of those were slaughtered and will continue to be slaughtered because there is an industry there, right? So if it hadn't been an icon, it would only have been bigger if it was Aslan.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if it hadn't have been an icon, no one would know about it.
Right.
So in reality, yes, it is. It does seem to be a small level of influence, and who gets fired? Like the two guys who helped lead him out of the protected area and the dentist who shot him. But it's not isolated, because it speaks to injustice and the idea of power as something that gives you ultimate access, right?
Mm-hmm.
I have the money to kill something. I'm
going
to go kill something. I don't care that it's protected. I have the money. What are you going to say about it? Shut up, Donald Trump 2016,
right? Yeah.
So there's that. People don't like that. And because it's It's about money being impunity. You know, and we're bumping up against that reality. You know it when you walk down Hollywood Boulevard, right? Mm-hmm. Because you're looking
I'm trying not to, but...
Right? He's done with them.
I'm done.
But you're looking... You can, in the same gaze, look down at your feet and see people who have their names in gold, right? Mm-hmm. And there's somebody who is without a home next to that.
Yeah.
Right? The irony being, it's like, wait, what does one person have better than the other? A circumstance, a position of privilege, access. Why is one CEO worth, you know, $200 million, but the worker is worth maybe $9 an hour? You know? Mm-hmm. So, and, you know, why is a guy who, why can someone go murder a lion?
Right.
And, you know, hide for a little bit and then go back and kill a rhino once all the PR, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Because there's something unfair about it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what is being wrestled with, you know.
That's it. That brings it all together. Wow.
Yeah.
You're listening to Grant's Rants. Please rate, subscribe, and share on iTunes and social media. Spread the word. There are a lot more rants to come. Follow us on Twitter at Grants_Rants. And now for the one-on-one.
So now that we've been able to talk about the topics that are on our mind.
Oh, yeah.
Let's talk about you. We mentioned earlier, I've known you for a while. I know you've always been a very focused individual.
Thank you so much.
So what is the goal? Where are you going?
What is the goal? That's a great question. I started in entertainment just shy of 10 years ago. I did an internship in New York at Comedy Central, and it was like the Page program, another rotational program. So it was like three different areas within Comedy Central proper, and then time at the Colbert Report in the writer's room, and then time at the Daily Show in the writer's room. And those were formative experiences for me. And completing a master's degree in writing, going through the Page program and writing there, like being a contributing freelance writer, getting jokes on TV, being on TV, all of that has kind of pointed me towards being a late night comedy variety writer.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that is the ultimate goal.
Yeah,
comedy is my way of speaking back. We grew up very sheltered. We were not allowed to watch The Simpsons in my house. But there was always something funny. Like, my dad was a storyteller. My mom would entertain people at parties. I don't know what she was saying, because my mom is Ethiopian and she was speaking Amharic, but I just knew that she had some gravity and people would be laughing. So that was demonstrated to me early on. Because I have a heart for things being just and for things being fair, I'm Liz Lemon, right? You remember how we were introduced to her? The first episode of 30 Rock, where she's on her way, blah, 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 da, 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 wants to get a hot dog, da, 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 and then somebody cuts in front of her in line. Or somebody forms another line at a hot dog stand, and then everybody starts lining up after the guy instead, who just basically cut everybody off. And she decides to buy all of the hot dogs as like a sign of protest to be like, nobody gets hot dogs.
Yeah.
What he did is just not fair. I mean, it happens when we're driving down the street, right?
Right.
Somebody waits to the last second to get into a turn lane, which is like, you could have done that.
Oh my God, it happened all the way here.
It'll happen to you and me at least once this weekend.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So I have a heart for those things. And I see a way of talking back about it being through monologues and jokes and storytelling. So that's ultimately what I aim to create. That's what I'm working through, and it shows up in jokes.
Right. Now, with regards to late night television, what was the first late night show you watched, and how old were you?
It was probably Leno, and I was probably...
For me, it was Leno.
Right? Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a cultural touchstone for a reason.
Yeah, I kind of found him and I was watching because it was late and I was on NBC and I was like, well, let me just watch this. Like, yeah. Let me just see what this is. Like, I was probably like 13 and was like, okay, I can watch these shows.
Right.
I gave myself permission and yeah. I just started to get into them. And of course, like my grandmother would talk about them and
yeah.
no one in my house cared for Letterman at
yeah.
all.
Oh yeah, like, I had a best friend growing up and it was like they're a Letterman family, we're a Leno family.
Yes.
And somehow it said something
yeah.
about us.
So I kind of felt like, okay, then I can watch Leno then because people in my family like him.
Yeah.
And then I would watch him and talk about the shows and his jokes with my grandmother.
Yeah.
And then it just happened to be to bring it to the NBC Page program
yeah.
that was the show that we get to be on,
yeah.
on set for, which was just like such a full circle moment
yeah,
for
very
me.
Beautiful. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So
yeah.
that was it. How old were you when you got into late night?
I'm trying to remember. Probably younger than 10. And I specifically remember there's this one episode where it was Leno and it was, I think, Clint Black, like one of the country singers. And they were doing this bit where they both had violins. Obviously, Jay Leno cannot play violin. Or I couldn't at that time. Who knows? He's got a lot of free time right
that's
now.
That's true, yes.
If by free time you mean now he can focus on what he always did, which was stand-up. But Jay pulled up the violin, and what would happen, what he would pretend to play it, and then Sandy, the sound guy, would pipe in the sound. But the second time he did it, the sound was off, and everybody started laughing. Because it's like, you know, and that became the joke.
Mm-hmm.
And they're both laughing about it, Leno and I think Clint Black, right? Because it's funny. And it was unintended. And I remember sitting with my dad just laughing about that. And yeah, that was a moment where
yeah.
I was like, yeah, here we are. I'm with my dad. You know, we're both able to laugh about this pretty hard. Like, yeah, it was formative.
Did you ever look back at any of the episodes before Jay,
mm-hmm.
Johnny Carson episodes when someone like Joan Rivers was on, or did you
mm-hmm.
ever get an opportunity to look back at those?
Yeah, and they were pretty out there. I think mm-hmm. people like to think of a previous time being more buttoned up. Not necessarily the case, and late
mm-hmm.
night was a good place for that to boil over. There's this one of Bette Midler like singing a song about being too fat.
Mm-hmm.
Did you see that?
No, I don't think so, actually.
It's Bette Midler, it's Carson, and she does this whole song about being too fat. So fast forward 20, 30 years, who do we know that's blowing up big time, hashtag train wreck,
yeah.
who is, you know, in that same ilk?
That's true.
Right?
So you mentioned Amy Schumer. Where do you see yourself in relation to her? Do you relate to her? Do you consider her some type of a role model? And if not, or who do you really look up to in this business?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think she is great. She is not an overnight success in a lot of ways. One, she's a good model. She's not an overnight success. It seems like that, but it took, I don't know, 10 years to get that way.
Mm-hmm.
What we see on TV is what happens after many years of a stand-up comic traveling and living in bad hotel rooms.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah,
I believe it. And she reminds people of that on certain
yeah.
shows. She's not shy to say, look, this is like the real deal.
This is not, you know, all that glitters is not gold. So
yeah.
I like that as an example of the amount of work that it takes. Anytime that I'm like, this is not happening soon enough, I'm going to drive off the bridge and go straight into the ocean. I mean, it's good to have those stories around. I also like that she tackles issues. It's an easier way to talk about difficult things when you can put it into a sketch.
What did you think of the sketch she did about Cosby?
Where she's in the courtroom?
In the courtroom, yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't know. It's so hard, you know, because
I'm just surprised she even went there and did it.
Yeah.
Because it's just, that could be, it could fall really flat.
Yeah.
It's like that's a risky one.
It's a huge it's a scab that is not, it's a wound that's not scabbed. Mm-hmm. It's not even healed over.
Yeah.
You know? So applause at the risk, and you kind of have to talk about it, right?
Yeah.
And also, I like the way that she runs the show from what I know about on the inside. Like, her EP is a woman named Jessie Klein. And when I was interning at Comedy Central 9 years ago, I accidentally spilled a Diet Coke inside Jessie Klein's office in the development department. She wasn't there because I think she was just beginning to pursue outside things and be like, I want to be a writer. And maybe she had just started doing stand-up. But I like what I know about her. There are stories of her being in a room with other people who want to be comedians, writing staff, like a PA, writer's assistant, like being in a room with someone. And you know that the environment, the pool in a room can change mm-hmm. from show to show. You kind of never know what you're walking into. And there are stories of her like literally being the voice of people who want to pitch a joke. Or being like, hey, wait, wouldn't it be funny if this? And then her saying it out loud mm-hmm. and using her space to show the other person what it would have been, like what the reaction would have been. Like grooming someone, growing somebody else's voice. Mm-hmm. I feel so emotional about that. I feel like that's what it is.
Yeah.
Because comedy, reviews on Yelp, documentaries about the food system, all of that is speaking up. It's speaking out mm-hmm. and using your voice.
Along the way, you know, mm-hmm. there's so many highs and lows to this business. God, I've been through so many peaks and valleys lately, especially. It's like
peaks and valleys.
It's like, who can keep track? But I want to know, what are some really like humbling experiences? Even one, perhaps, that it was like, okay, this is the moment that I'm going to probably remember for the rest of my time in this career.
Oh, yeah. I can tell you I have a juicy one. So I had just finished getting a master's degree in screenwriting from USC.
Right.
So not a small thing. And before that, I'd gotten a undergrad degree from Northwestern. So not a dum-dum is what the resume says. And I graduated with that and started going on interviews, right? And I remember interviewing at a post-production studio. And it's me, it's the HR lady. She's going over my resume. You get to the end of the interview and she's like, do you have any questions? Da-da-da. So I say, what has a previous receptionist, which is the job I was interviewing for, what has a previous receptionist done that has made him or her stand out as great?
Right. And that's something that you would ask in an interview like that, because our receptionist, what the hell type of questions could I ask for a job like that?
Right.
Like, do you have any questions for us? I hate that.
Yeah.
Because it's like, okay, this is my opportunity to be able to show that I can identify, you know, a good question that would be like, you know, something no one thought of, some scholarly moment to find out what an assistant does.
Yeah.
And it's like, I've done this job, like, especially if you're taking a step backwards. You're coming in there, not necessarily taking a step backwards, but you're coming in there very educated.
Yeah, I'm interviewing to be a receptionist with a master's degree.
Right.
And you're trying
to find a scholarly question to ask about. Regarding taking this job as a receptionist.
I mean, ultimately, what that question is me saying, how can I move up quick?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, yeah.
What's a good person do in this job? That, mm-hmm. you know, that's what I asked. And she said, this is the lady in HR. She says, well, the girl before organized the menu book, like alphabetically, I was like, all right, okay, I can do that. And she was like, and she also baked cupcakes for the guys.
I love that.
She also baked cupcakes for the guys. This is what she said to me.
So there's your point. Did you make a note to write that down and say, in order to move up in the world,
be a 1950s housewife. Yeah.
Oh my God.
So that was a huge thing for me. I was like, wow. First, I thought it was on Mad Men for a second.
No, really.
I was like, am I being punked?
Yeah, for real.
This is hilarious. Don't you realize that those ideals are actually ultimately limiting where you're going to go as a woman? big cup. I was just like, wow, this
now,
is the
real
world.
What, I was going to say, what did you do? What was your face saying?
Probably said it all. I'm not good at hiding it.
Me neither. I have no poker face anymore. I think I did.
Yeah.
And then I just had to cut through so much BS that like at this point, it's like, you'll know if I'm disgusted. You'll know if I'm mad with you. Oh, yeah. You'll know if I'm unimpressed.
But you have to have that. It's an asset to you, right? Because you are on a screen.
Yeah.
So people want to know that.
Right.
No one wants to watch a statue. It's not entertaining.
Were you insulted by that?
Who wouldn't be?
Mm-hmm.
You know, who would not be?
Right.
They tell you to expect nothing. I had a class in grad school where someone asked the guy who was teaching us, who happened to be like a agent, asked him what we would expect after we graduated. And he said, expect nothing. That might be, he might have been thinking about it other than how it came across, right? He might have been saying, don't expect to like walk into any room and get whatever you want, or so you're gonna have to work your way up. And that's any industry, mm-hmm. right? But that is basically telling some, what's lower than that?
Right. Expect nothing. That's good
big
advice.
Cupcakes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I recently went on an interview and they were asking me, you know, you've been to a couple of different places. Like,
right.
you know, why have you, moved around? Keep in mind, I was at one company through NBC for 3 years. And I moved around within the company.
Yeah.
But I mean, it was, no small feat. And it was a progression in my career.
Uh-huh.
It was a move up.
Mm-hmm.
And
all the right cupcakes, huh?
Exactly. there was nothing. Nothing like questionable, no gap in employment, whatever. And so I said, in this business, you have to, take different opportunities where the growth is happening.
Uh-huh.
And then also you have to bob and weave, and you have to kind of, find that way up.
Yeah.
There's no one way to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And you can tell this guy had no indication of what I was talking about. This is someone who must have walked into this job through a hookup from someone higher up that they knew, or some type of, resume pushing.
Yeah.
And I got like the dirtiest look, like the look of just, I have no idea. Like, this is like, what are you talking about?
Yeah.
Bobbing and weaving.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what drives me crazy, because it's like, you can't expect anything.
Right.
You can't expect anything, because it's like, you've got people on all different levels who hold these jobs who are like really fortunate in some aspects, and then other people who really have to just keep finding different ways and leaping from ladder to ladder to try to get to the top.
Yeah.
And it's so frustrating.
Yeah. And some people say, you know what, I'm not doing this, and I'm going to go get an MBA. I don't care that I'm sinking,
mm-hmm.
100, 150K into the next 2 years of my life.
Yeah. Someone once said that to me, that with this industry, nothing is deserved.
Mm.
You really don't deserve anything here.
Right.
Whether that's through education or being a really good worker and putting in time, you're in and you're out just as fast.
Mm-hmm.
That can be with regards to layoffs, restructuring, whatever. There's really no loyalty.
Yeah.
None.
There's no guarantee.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that's, I think, a common thing across many different cities and states and jobs.
Yeah.
I think that loyalty now is really a rare thing.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why people jump around so much. So, you do have to bob and weave and figure it out.
The demand is greater than the supply. Like, I've had interviews, even with a master's degree, where the guy didn't shake my hand. The guy did not shake my outstretched hand.
Yes, completely.
And so
there's
what
no excuse
do you
for that.
Do about that?
There's
First of all, it tells you you do not want to work there, and you're not going to be able to, by the way.
Yeah.
But it's like, okay, I see what it's like in this pool. Me getting out.
Right.
But those are experiences, like your interview, like cupcakes, that you remember. And this will be, it's funny now. It wasn't funny in the moment.
Right.
But did it make me stronger? Did I get a funny blog out of it? Yeah.
Yeah.
Hell yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it builds you.
Mm-hmm. How do you keep your morale up? How do you keep finding that next thing to do what you came here to do?
Drugs. No. I do a lot of self-work. I'm a firm believer in that. My older sister is, she has a MSW, so she's, that's a master's in social work, and she works, she's a hospice worker.
Mm-hmm.
So she's like a counselor, basically.
Yeah.
So she's in my ear. I think that there have been some like early tragedies that I've lived through that made me question things. So I'm influenced by that. Yeah.
And moving forward, staying motivated, all kind of comes together for you.
And knowing that, like your friend said, no one deserves anything. I mean, that's mm-hmm. one side of the spectrum, right? But knowing that you have to believe that what's meant for you is yours, and that no hell or high water will change that. Mm-hmm. And you and I have lived this experience.
True.
You know, how did you go from watching Leno with your grandma to work in the show? Mm-hmm. That wasn't an accident. Right. How did I go from laughing with my dad to writing jokes that would make my dad laugh? We're talking about a seed that was planted that paid off 10 years later, baby.
Right.
So I didn't order that. I didn't create it. So something has to be. Something's going on.
Now, where are you right now with your process?
So I found recently this site called Reductress.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, you know what the onion is? Everybody knows what the onion is, right?
Yeah.
Like, yeah. So,
see, I'm not a huge fan of the onion, to be honest with you.
It's very, you know what? It's very specific.
Yeah.
You know?
To me, I don't get it.
Yeah.
Like, I just don't. I'm one of those people that just doesn't see it. I just don't see it necessary. I don't know. I don't get it.
Yeah. And again, it's a very specific take on things.
Mm-hmm.
It kind of reminds me also of like UCB, and it grew out of Chicago, and as did, there's a lot of improv in Chicago, and there's a very specific way of being funny if you're an improviser, if you're from UCB, which is, you know, where I got my training, versus I'm going to IO. So it is a very specific point of view.
Mm-hmm.
It's fake news, but it's also satire,
right?
And I like satire.
Mm-hmm.
So, Reductress is the feminist onion, and they're out of New York.
Mm-hmm.
So I stumbled on them, I don't even know how, and read the articles and was like, wow, this is exactly how I get angry, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So I ended up pitching some articles to them and have, I think, three of them up now. One is, the one that's done the best is called, Is Your Stupid Cat Even Bikini Ready?
Yeah.
You know, which is about all of the women's articles that, the barrage of those articles that say 15 ways to change your body.
Right.
Are you enough?
Yeah.
No, you're not. There's an industry around making people feel like they are not enough, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which is not fair, not true, and therefore hilarious in some way.
Right.
Yeah, so they're doing that really well. I'm proud of those articles. I also do, I'm in a writer's room for a monthly stage show called It's Past My Bedtime with Topher Harless. Mm-hmm. Topher is a former NBC page, mm-hmm. also. And yeah, so we come up with jokes and perform in sketches. My first sketch went up actually this past Monday on our show. It was called Welcome to Feminist Tutors.
Oh my God, I can just imagine this. This is so you.
It's absolutely me.
You mentioned Twitter. Where can we find you online? What type of things are you tweeting?
I look at Twitter as constantly updating a resume. So a lot of it is in reaction to live events, like tweeting along with the debate, or, you know.
Mm-hmm. Oh, the debate. You tweeted along with that mess of a debate?
I did not.
Oh, okay.
But
there's plenty more to come.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Yeah, but things like that. So I do that. I have the show that I perform in, they tape it. It's on Periscope live while we do, which Periscope, by the way, is terrifying. I've used it 3 times just to let people watch me brush my teeth. Anyways, so it's on the Periscope, right? That's once a month towards the beginning of the month. And then they record it. So through my Twitter feed, you'll have access, heads ups about that, and the clipped out sketches that we write, that I also write. So that's the best way in, I think. Twitter is a main touchstone for me. Mm-hmm. That leads to, that's where I link things I do on Reductress. That's where I link things I do in longer prose form. That's really probably the best way.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, no doubt there'll be more coming from you.
Yeah.
I'm going to have to check out the articles that you mentioned on Reductress.
Yeah.
I'll have to do that right after this. And so should you. Please check out Pauline on Twitter. Your handle?
It's P-E-K-H-O-L-T as in Tom. It's the first letter of my first name, my full last name.
Okay, and you can find the spelling of her name in the information surrounding this episode,
mm-hmm.
as well as her Twitter handle. We'll post that as well.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, so I remember we were talking about Twitter, and you were like, I wish my name was like at Boops.
Right? At hire her. You know.
Right, I hear you. Pauline, thank you for coming in and talking
you.
About everything from the slums of Hollywood Boulevard to the truth about what it takes and
yeah.
how focused you have to be to really make a success of yourself here.
Thank you so much for having me.
This has been Grant's Rants. Follow us on Twitter at Grants_Rants. Cover art created by Howie Roney. Voiceover by Sir Richard Wentworth. Original theme music composed by Alexander Arnson. Granted Wish Productions 2015.